The Tactical Times 2 Tees Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Tactical Times 2 Tees Podcast. Today we're looking at all things statistics. We'll be looking at the tackle stat, why it causes so much contention. We'll be looking at why dribbles are focused upon so much in the modern game. We'll be looking at the age-old obsession with goals and assists. And we'll be looking at the age of XG, how expected numbers are changing the way we look at football.
The Tactical Times 2 Tees Podcast.
Bolly, Fernandes, Holgate, Shah and Cabasele are the top 5 defenders for tackles won per 90 minutes in their Premier League this season. Moutinho, Tribal, Gomez, Nakamba and Fred, top 5 players dribbled past per 90 minutes, the top 5 players beaten by a dribble. Diego Rico, Ndidi, Holding, Kapuwe and Billing, top 5 interceptions per 90 minutes. And Joel Linton, King, Mane, Zaha and Ayew have the most losses of possession through poor control per 90 minutes in the Premier League. What does this tell us? It tells us very little. We can't look at who the best defenders are by those who do the most defending. We can't tell the worst midfielders by looking at who are beaten most often by a dribble. We can't tell the most effective central midfielders by those who make the most interceptions. And likewise, we can't look at the most wasteful attackers by looking at who loses the ball through a poor first touch more often than others. Numbers always remain good for highlighting individual performances within the context of an individual game. And then perhaps within the context of an entire season or a sample of games, but comparatively they don't give us much. You have to look within the context of the team, the standard of the opposition, at the time they're playing the game. Things change all the time in football. We need a lot of wider context when we're using statistics, as always. When we use them as an average, it can be really deceptive. And Sadio Mane is a great example of this. He's been one of the standout performers this season. Genuinely one of the most informed attackers in the world for the best part of 2.5 years, I'd say. Only 2 players have lost possession through poor control more times per game than Sadio. Is that a testament to him playing poorly? Is that a testament to him being really involved? Is that a testament to him making risky decisions in offensive areas where he's crowded, outmarked? Who knows? The only way to tell is to watch the games and to judge it on an individual basis. And this is what we need to do with match statistics and numbers, because we cannot gain an informed opinion by looking at a number, even in comparison to another number from another player. So often these statistics are used to further a false narrative and to encourage false agendas. Zaha's the big one for this, I think. People see him as this wasteful attacker. He completes a lot of dribbles, he loses the ball very often. And while that may be true, it doesn't talk about how effective he is as a football player. Another one who is quite often praised hugely or criticised unfairly for statistical importance is Aaron Wan-Bissaka at Manchester United. He attempts and makes or completes a lot of tackles every game. He did it at Crystal Palace. He's now doing it at Manchester United. Only one player in the Premier League has a higher average for tackles won, and that's Wilfred Ndidi, who is currently enjoying one of the best defensive midfield performances I've seen for a long time at this level. Can we compare Wan-Bissaka, right back at Manchester United, to Wilfred Ndidi, centre mid, defensive mid at Leicester City? I wouldn't say so, but if you look at the list of tackles won, you would have to compare them because they're the top 2. Does it make Wan-Bissaka a good defender because he wins so many of his tackles? Does it make Wan-Bissaka a poor defender because he's constantly in the position to have to make all of these tackles? We don't see that number of tackles from other right backs, from other defenders. So what does that point us towards? Confusion. To be honest, again, we have to use the numbers within context. if you watch the way Aaron Wan-Bissaka defends, we can see that the number of tackles makes sense. He's very much an all-action right back. He's within a defence that has been relatively organised, that hasn't conceded too many goals, but it's also a defence that relies on pace. And once you break those lines, you need somebody to make those covering challenges, which is why the fullbacks, the wingbacks especially, tend to make a lot. Ricardo Pereira at Leicester has also attempted and won a lot. Andrew Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold at Liverpool, a fraction as much. Those at Chelsea, the same. Arsenal, the same. Depends on the way you defend. And at Manchester United, it's set up for the fullbacks and the wingbacks to have to do this defensive work and to make these recovering challenges. So from those tackle numbers, we cannot decide, is he a good player, is he a bad player? It may point us towards the kind of player he is, but nothing beats good old-fashioned eyeballs. You have to watch, you have to see, you have to come to your own conclusion. Football is a fluid, non-linear series of movements and actions and events. Each one leads to the next. Lots of possible, unpredictable eventualities. If we relegate the game to a simple matter of numbers, statistics, figures, we're missing a very big, very vital aspect of the game. It's worth remembering next time we try to use statistics to highlight a player as good or bad, the best, the worst, somewhere in between. Willy Bolly and Phil Jones both posted impressive numbers last season in the Premier League. Willy Bolly posted fantastic numbers, and he has again this season before his unfortunate injury. Phil Jones last season, his numbers were fantastic. Some of them were better, arguably, than Harry Maguire at Leicester City. And of course, we know what happened to Harry Maguire at Leicester City. He's effectively replaced Phil Jones in the Manchester United team and became the most expensive defender in the world. Can we suggest, realistically, intelligently, that Phil Jones is as good, as effective as Harry Maguire in the same position? I would say no, absolutely not. But the numbers suggested he was better. He's not, of course. Again, great example of why we must be careful when we look at these numbers. Dejan Lovren at Liverpool regularly performs more defensive work than Virgil van Dijk. Van Dijk is incredible. Nobody comes near him, in my opinion. Lovren performs more. Often his partner does. Joel Matip, when he's next to Van Dijk, often performs more defensive work. The numbers will be higher. They will paint him as the better defender. With defenders especially, we have to understand how important intelligence and positioning comes into it. Van Dijk doesn't make many tackles. He makes plenty of clearances. He makes plenty of blocks. He makes a fair few number of interceptions. But he's not flying into tackles the way perhaps some others are. I would very much call him a front foot defender. He's all about positioning. He's all about pace and strength and marking. One of the reasons he's so effective is that brain of his, as well as his imposing stature. But if we use statistics alone, then it doesn't really give us anything. It doesn't tell us how good he has been. You have to watch the games. You have to kind of understand where the virtue of defending comes from. We can't use goals, assists, tackles, clearances, headers, one, to point towards a good defender. We just have to watch them. How do they operate within the unit? How are they covering each other? How hard do they fight to prevent that shot, to prevent that final ball, to win that header, to prevent the cross that can so often lead to a goal? Defending is very much a mental aspect, as much as it is a physical and technical one. We must be careful with defenders. A good defence is a unit, as I say, three or four or five, sometimes six, sometimes more players working together, synchronised in positioning and understanding of each other. They need to know who's active, who's passive, who tracks, who blocks, who covers, who engages. To use the numbers of the defenders, whether it is duels, tackles, interceptions, blocks, clearances, is again missing a huge aspect of the game. That mental aspect, that understanding, the reason why the best defenders are very rarely young ones. Because so much of it is based within experience and making the right decisions at the right times. We have to remember that. Numbers are there only ever as a point of interest, a reference, sometimes quirky trivia, and nothing more than that. They're there to aid us in our understanding, not to give us understanding as a be-all and end-all number, ranking, whatever you want to call it. They're not there to tell us who's the best or who's the worst. I'm personally a big advocate, and I want to encourage more understanding of those unquantifiable aspects of the game. The psychological ones, the heart, the spirit, the winning habits, the losing habits, fan power, the never-say-die attitudes. They're very difficult, if not impossible, to express with numbers on a screen. If we focus on these numbers too much, once again, it's a recurring theme. We're losing sight of a really, really important aspect of football.
The Tactical Times 2 Tees podcast.
Goals and assists. It's the meat and vegetables of football, right? If we break football down to its very basics, to its core, it's nothing more than a simple collection of actions intended to either score a goal, create a goal, or prevent the scoring of a goal. But it's more than that, right? We watch football every week. We watch an unimaginable number of hours of football, of balls being kicked around a field by highly paid professionals. Is it just about goals and defending them? It has to be more than that. When we compare two players using figures focused only on how many goals they've scored or directly created, directly is important. Again, it's a recurring theme. Again and again, if we do that, we're losing sight of a huge aspect of the game. The numbers can show us how effective a player has been, and they're often used. I do the same. It's a very easy reference point to make. We're in the age, or coming towards the end of the age, of Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, who we've been very, very lucky to see for the best part of 15, almost 20 years. Because their goal figures have been so stupendously high. Not just goals, but assists, trophies won, key passes, everything related to the creation of chances. Those two players have been unbelievably good, unbelievably effective. We did it with ex-Premier League players, the likes of Alan Shearer, Thierry Henry, Bergkamp, Letizia in the negative. Fantastic players. Some were focused only on the goals, as a marker of how good they've been, like Shearer. Some we use the goals as a marker to point how underwhelming they were, like Mathieu Letizia, who was a fantastic football player, universally praised at the time, a wonderful technician. But he didn't score 300, 400 goals, so he didn't get that praise, that exposure, that publicity. And it's something I think we need to try to move away from, is this obsession with goals and assists. I believe that modern fans are in the habit of looking at who scored the most and using that to decide whether or not they were the best. During a given season, a given decade, or even longer in a lot of cases, goals are used as a comparative marker, as the ultimate reference point between attackers. And that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So often scoring a goal in a similar way to directly assisting a goal depends on a player's role within a team. Could we compare the likes of Harry Kane to Heung-min Son at Tottenham? Is Harry Kane a hugely superior player to Son because he scores a lot more goals over the last 5 years or so? Couldn't say so. Is Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, that much better than Roberto Firmino because they have outscored him regularly in their time that they've been at Liverpool? Wouldn't say so. We have to understand how each player contributes to that team, especially with goals. Intelligence is needed to occupy the areas. Firmino is a great example of that. He is such a hard centre forward to try to define as such. To compare him and Harry Kane, though they would have to play in the same position is almost impossible. They're such different players. And that's reflected in the goals. That's reflected in how many shots they have at goal. That's reflected in, certainly, in the way they play. But you could put them together. You could say Harry Kane has this many goals in the Premier League. Roberto Firmino has that many goals in the Premier League. one of them is clearly superior to the other as a football player, as an attacker, as a centre forward. We're losing aspects again. We're not appreciating the game for what it is if we decide to do that. As well as intelligence within the role, you need good luck, you need good management, good effective players around you. You could argue that had Alan Shearer, although Newcastle had some fantastic teams throughout the years, had he signed for Manchester United, his goal figures could have been through the roof. Already very, very high, but he never had the world-class talent around him. He had good players, he had effective players, but he never had the world's very best. Likewise, Thierry Henry. Had he stayed at Juventus, rather than moving to Arsenal, rather than setting the Premier League on fire the way he did, would he have had more goals, playing with the likes of Del Piero, Pavel Nedved? Or would he have had less, having played with that fantastic Arsenal team, with Dennis Bergkamp, with Freddie Ljungberg, with Robert Pires, with so many great technicians, so many great creators? It's impossible to see. So we have to use what we know. We have to talk about what actually happened rather than hypotheticals. We have to understand that goals and assists are not everything. So you need a lot to score a goal. You need a lot to be a good football player. Almost every goal scored is comprised of different inputs, on the ball, off the ball, players who aren't credited with anything, not just goals and assists, but key passes, XG, XG chain, XG build-up numbers, which we now have, which we'll get to a little bit later. There's a lot going on in football all the time that isn't quantifiable, that often isn't even noticed. You need good movement, you're dragging away markers, you're splitting defences, you're making dummy runs, you're winning physical battles, you're marking the right man to close a passing lane, you've provided a good long switch of play very early in the move. There's a lot happening at any one time, and it becomes impossible really to appreciate each player's individual input in a good move, in a good chance, or often in a goal, because we're not seeing enough of it. So the goals are a reference point, as are assists and key passes, chances created. Now we have big chances created, which is an even newer number. Again, it's nothing more than that reference point. It's a way to just see how much that person has done, or how, in a way, how lucky they were, because they're that man in that role, in that position, to score those goals, to create those chances. In the end, I think an ambition of ours at the Tactical Times, and I think an ambition of many modern football supporters, is to try to encourage this deeper understanding. Not more intelligence, it's not about knowing more. It's about looking at football in a slightly different way. It's about deeper appreciation of the game, especially from an attacking and defending aspect, if we separate it to attack and defence, as we can, to appreciate how that actually works, why the things that happen, happen. How a majority of goals are scored, how a majority of goals are defended. The numbers will continue to be used to highlight individual players. I do it myself, it's a very easy thing to do. Goals, assists, tackles won, chances created, it's all very, very easy. And people like numbers, I like numbers. But we must stop using them as the end of player analysis. It's just not the way it works. It's not paramount or more important than the aspects that are unquantifiable, as we said. We need to remember what football is at its core, a team game. It's not a team of individuals. And I think it's worth remembering how important the team is in every aspect of the game, including goals, assists, and chances created.
The Tactical Times 2 Tees podcast.
XG, XA, XGA, XG chain, XG build-up. It's all very jargony, right? Almost like some kind of pretentious code understood only by those within the nerdy inner sanctum of modern football. It really isn't, and it doesn't need to be. Expected data is a relatively new aspect of the game, and I love to use it. I think it's fantastic, but while it's useful for highlighting individual aspects, it isn't, as with the number for goals, assists, chances created, it's not the be-all and end-all of anything. So Opta define XG as expected goals, measuring the quality of a shot based on several variables such as assist type, shot angle, and distance from goal, whether it was a headed shot or whether it was defined as a big chance. It's a pretty vague definition. The way I look at it is, how likely was a player to score from a certain position? Some goals are easier to score than others. Long-range goals are much harder to score than penalties, for example. There are algorithms in place to try and determine the quality of a chance, but it's not 100% accurate, of course not. There are different statistic providers giving different numbers for the same actions. It's not a definite science, but it has given us slightly more accuracy in determining the quality of a chance. We used to, for a long time, just use shots on target, which don't tell us very much. You can have 30 shots, 18 of which are from outside the box, 18 off target. Those 18 don't really tell you anything about how good you were, but then the 13 shots that you had from inside the box, 6 from inside the 6-yard area that you scored 5 goals from, tell you a lot more. So to quantify this quality of a chance is, I think, useful, certainly useful, and in a way important. We sometimes use it to describe which team was more deserving of a win. Of course, that's not always the case. If a team defends like lions for a whole game, hits a team twice on the counter-attack, wins 2-0, their XG will probably be lower than a team that attacked more. But you wouldn't say they were less deserving of the win. They just played the game perfectly, tactically astute, intelligent, and they defended fantastically well. They're probably deserving of a win. So it's not always, again, who has the higher XG who deserves the win. It's not always the case. And I don't believe that was ever the intention of XG. It's a useful metric for determining the quality of a chance or the probability of a goal from a chance, but it is, of course, deceptive. We're able to quantify how likely, though without 100% accuracy, how likely a player is to score from a chance. And that's it. That's all we have. How good was the cross that a player hit the target from with a header? XG won't tell us that, but it will tell us how easy the headed chance was, basically. Football is more than a game of goals, chances, and assists, like we've said. You cannot determine the way a game has gone in terms of the swings in balance of momentum, of possession, the effectiveness of attack versus defense by analyzing the numbers. Again, you have to watch the game. Watch as much football as you possibly can. Without that knowledge, without your eyeballs and your brain telling you exactly what's going on, you cannot know what's gone on. XG will not always give you this accurate representation of events on the field. Likewise, it didn't when we just had basic match numbers, passes completed, shots on target, errors leading to shots, errors leading to goals. It doesn't really give us that much. The game isn't a collection of data. We have 22 human beings kicking, heading, throwing a ball in a variety of different ways for a variety of different reasons and purposes. It's important we don't lose sight of that reality, that fact. When we turn the game into numbers, whether it is goals, assists, as we've said, or in this case more intricate decimal XG numbers, we're ignoring a huge aspect of the game. We must refer back to this point. I'm repeating myself here, but we must refer back to it that the numbers are there to further our understanding, not to provide the understanding. We can't look at the match stats of a game, regardless of how intricate or detailed they are, and understand how that game went. We simply must watch it. If we can't watch the whole thing, at least watch extended highlights, which tend to focus on big chances. That's better than nothing at all. We mustn't relegate the game to a collection of numbers. We mustn't forget what football is really about at its core. And never forget to question everything we read, especially. Context, as ever, and perspective are so, so important.
The Tactical Times 2 Tees podcast.
Okay, just the one question today. This is from Twitter user at EnglishPaul2019. He asks, has there ever been an entire season without a Premier League manager being sacked? That's an easy one. There hasn't ever. And I don't know if there's ever been a professional league season in any country without a manager being sacked. It's so common. And of course, it makes sense because football is about winning and losing, really. If a team wins every game, somebody has to lose. And those losers tend to get replaced. The managers tend to get replaced. So I think there will always be sackings. Premier League football, or football in generally at a professional level, isn't neutral enough for there to be no sackings. There are too many heavy defeats. There are too many big wins. There are too many bore draws within those 20 teams in the Premier League for this to not be the case. So no, short answer is there's never been no sacking during a Premier League season. The lowest, though, was two. That was in the Premier League's first season. Brian Clough left Nottingham Forest and Ian Portfield left Chelsea. In the following summer, that season, there were four further changes. The highest remains the 2017-18 season, which saw 15 managerial changes during the campaign, and a further six during the following summer. During the first 9 years of the Premier League, only once were there more than 10 changes during a season, and that was in 1994-95. In five of the following 10 years, there were over 10 changes during the course of a season. In the last 8 years, we've seen an average of 10. Again, managerial changes during this season. We've already seen six this season. We're currently on course to meet the average quite easily. So it's getting worse. Managers are being sacked much more easier than they were in the past. But there's always been a lot. It's not something new. I haven't got the data for how things were during the 80s or before the Premier League, really. But it wouldn't surprise me if it was exactly the same. If we find this average of 6 to 8 per season. I think it will get more because the pressure has increased, the amount of money in the game has increased, and with money you get added expectations. So I think perhaps the average will go up a little bit. But it's not likely to stop, unfortunately.
The Tactical Times 2 Tees podcast.
So that is it for episode 3. A pretty short one today. Don't forget to check out the website. We'll have another article, another player performance review soon, featuring Aaron Wan-Bissaka against Manchester City. It was a great defensive performance in many ways, quite a poor one in others, so it should be an interesting look. It's Christmas Eve, so please enjoy yourself this Christmas. Have a great time. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to support the channel, please visit our Patreon. Please visit our website. You can find details about how you can support us via that. We do have a YouTube channel, which you can find at Tactical Times on YouTube. That is it from me for today. We will see you all next time. Have a good one, and bye-bye.
The Tactical Times 2 Tees podcast.